Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're really getting into something that sounds maybe a bit soft, vulnerability. But turns out it's actually one of the hardest, most crucial skills for, well, for leading today.
We're diving into Brené Brown's research, especially from Dare to Lead. It's pretty extensive stuff.
Yeah, and our goal here for you isn't just, you know, talking about courage. It's about giving you the actual words, the language, and some really practical tools.
Exactly. So you can take these big ideas like trust or leading with integrity and actually use them day to day, not just keep them as like abstract concepts.
Because that's the core of it, right? The whole big idea. Daring leadership isn't about being some kind of superhero leader who never messes up.
No.
It all comes down to one thing. How willing are you to rumble with vulnerability?
That's it. The research really hammers this home. Your ability to be a daring leader, it's capped. It can never be greater than your ability to handle that feeling of uncertainty, of risk, of emotional exposure.
So if you can't deal with that feeling.
All right. If you can't manage that, then all the other stuff, innovation, tough feedback, building teams, it doesn't happen effectively. It becomes almost impossible.
Okay. Let's unpack that core idea then. Uh-huh. Because the biggest myth, the one that stops people right away, is that vulnerability just means weakness.
Totally. People get really hung up on that, especially in professional settings where, you know, strength looks like certainty and control.
So what is vulnerability, according to the research?
Well, technically, it's defined as the emotion we feel in times of uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. But think bigger picture. It's actually where all the good stuff comes from.
Like what?
Like love, belonging, joy, but also creativity and innovation. Critically, innovation. You just can't innovate if you're not willing to risk failing.
And failure means feeling exposed.
Exactly. Right. Emotionally exposed. That's vulnerability.
And this connection between fear and courage is fascinating, too. We think brave leaders aren't afraid.
Right. But the research is super clear. Leaders feel brave and afraid, often at the same time. The real issue isn't the fear itself. It's how we react to it.
Can we respond?
Yeah, and that response, that's the armor.
Armor, yeah.
Yeah, armor is all the thoughts, the feelings, the behaviors we use to protect ourselves when we just don't want to face that discomfort of vulnerability. When we put on the armor, we're basically choosing to protect ourselves instead of being courageous.
Got it. So let's talk examples. I was really struck by this idea of foreboding joy. Can you unpack that one? What is that armor?
Oh, foreboding joy, yeah. It's that thing where maybe everything's going great.
Huh?
You know, you land the big account, your kid does something amazing, life feels good.
Okay.
And boom, this sense of dread just creeps in. You start thinking, ah, oh, this is too good to be true. When's the other shoe going to drop? You're basically dress rehearsing tragedy.
Trying to control the future pain by worrying about it now.
Exactly. It's a self-protection strategy.
So if that's the armor, why is the antidote practicing gratitude? That seems counterintuitive almost.
Well, think about it. Gratitude is about consciously choosing to feel the good thing right now, even knowing there's still risk involved. By feeling the joy, you're accepting that vulnerability is just part of the deal.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So you shift focus from worrying about the future bad stuff to appreciating the present good stuff.
You got it. Savoring the positive, even with the risk.
Okay, another armor. This one feels very familiar, especially in high-pressure jobs. Rewarding exhaustion.
Oh, yeah. Treating being constantly busy, sleep deprived, totally overwhelmed, like it's a badge of honor.
Like your productivity equals your self-worth.
Precisely. Yeah. And if your worth is tied to how much you produce, you can't ever stop. You're afraid that if you pause, you'll somehow disappear or become worthless.
Yeah.
And the research has this huge insight here. The opposite of play isn't work, it's depression.
Wow.
So daring leadership means you have to model rest and play and recovery. You have to support it in others too, because you simply cannot be creative or effective when you're running on empty.
Okay, last one for this section. Cynicism and sarcasm.
Yeah.
The source material is pretty direct about sarcasm, pointing out its Greek root means to tear flesh.
Ouch. Yeah, it doesn't pull punches. This armor, you know, being witty and critical all the time, it often hides despair.
Despair, really?
Yeah, despair defined as the belief that tomorrow's just going to be the same as today, that nothing can really change. So the antidote, it has to be hope.
Okay, let's pause on hope, though. Because it's not just a feeling, right? The research defines it as a cognitive thing. Three parts. Goal, pathway, and agency.
Mm-hmm. Goal is where you want to go. Pathway is how you think you can get there.
But agency. What exactly is that?
Agency is the crucial bit. It's the belief in yourself, the belief that you can actually stick to the path or, importantly, find a new path if the first one doesn't work out.
Ah, so it's like I'm resourceful, I can handle setbacks.
Exactly. I can figure this out, I can pivot. Without that belief, that agency cynicism takes over really easily because every setback looks like proof that change is impossible instead of just a detour.
Okay, so we see the armor, we know the antidotes like gratitude and hope. How do we actually do this? How do we talk about the tough stuff without our armor clanking?
Right. That brings us to the rumble.
The rumble. Sounds intense.
It sounds intense, but it's not really a fight. It's more like a dedicated conversation. The key is committing to leaning into the vulnerability, staying curious, sticking with the messy problem-solving part, and owning your piece of it.
And curiosity is central. You mentioned it's the opposite of the always-knowing armor.
Absolutely. If you walk in thinking you have all the answers, you just shut down any real discovery. Curiosity means admitting uncertainty, which is an act of vulnerability.
Makes you think of that Einstein quote.
The one about spending 55 minutes on the problem and 5 on the solution.
Yeah. We need the courage to just stay with the problem longer, not jump to fix it immediately.
Exactly. Which leads us to a really powerful tool for these rumbles. Understanding the shitty first draft, or the SFD.
Or the story I make up.
Right. Same idea. Our brains love completion. They love stories. So when we have limited information, especially if we're feeling fear or anxiety, we just make up a story to fill the gap.
We become conspiracy theorists about our own lives.
Pretty much. We create these narratives based mostly on fear, not facts.
So what's the tool? How do you use the SFD?
When you feel that hook, you know, tight jaw, anger rising, the tool is to actually name that first fear-based story out loud, not as fact, but as your internal narrative.
Like the ham fold over debacle anecdote.
Exactly. That fight wasn't really about the lack of ham for lunch. It was about one person's SFD kicking in. I'm failing at this. I'm a half-assed partner, leader, parent, by saying, okay, the story I'm telling myself is this. They took the heat out of the fight. They chose connection over being right.
Okay, but wait. If I say, the story I'm making up is that you don't respect me, isn't that just going to make things worse? Sounds like an accusation.
That's a really important point. It's how you use it. The SFD isn't meant as an attack. It's owning your reaction. It's saying, this is what's going on inside me right now, based on my fears.
It's just like, here's my internal state. Can you help me understand the reality better?
Precisely. It invites the other person to help you reality check the story. Help me see the data differently.
Got it. Okay, two more quick practical tools for framing these rumbles. First, permission slips.
Ah, yes. Super simple, super effective. They're just little intentions you set beforehand, like writing on a slip of paper, permission to be honest, or permission to ask for time to think.
So you clarify expectations.
Yeah, and it boosts accountability. It helps everyone move away from just reacting defensively.
And for group decisions, there's the turn and learn.
Right. Simple logistics.
Yeah.
Everyone writes down their estimate or their ranking, whatever it is, privately. On a sticky note, maybe.
And then?
Then everyone reveals them at the exact same time. Turn and learn.
Why does that matter?
It instantly counteracts groupthink. It stops the halo effect where everyone just follows the senior person's lead.
Or the bandwagon effect where people change their minds
right.
Once they see what others are saying.
Exactly. It forces everyone to bring their honest, independent thought to the table first, which is core to daring leadership.
You know, the power of using the right language really hits home with that military example, Colonel Didi Hanfill.
Oh, that's such a powerful story. She's talking to airmen about burnout, operational tempo. And someone asks when things will slow down because they're all so tired.
The standard question, needing the standard answer.
Right. And she was ready to give it. But then drawing on this vulnerability work, she took a huge risk. She asked the ones who said they were tired. She asked them to raise their hands again if what they were really feeling was lonely.
Wow. What happened?
Nearly a quarter of them raised their hands again. Loneliness. Not just tired.
That must have been stunning.
She said it was. Her first instinct was to fix it immediately or just move on because it felt so uncomfortable. But she didn't. She just held the space for that difficult truth.
And that's daring leadership, isn't it? Using the precise word lonely, not just tired,
yeah.
Even though it opened up a much harder, more systemic issue.
Exactly. It shifted the whole conversation from just managing exhaustion to looking at connection, inclusion, belonging within the unit. Mm. Takes real courage to ask a question when you don't have an easy answer ready. And that kind of courage, that willingness to use the right words and sit with discomfort leads us straight into trust.
Right. which, according to the research, isn't built through grand gestures.
No, not at all. It's built through, and this is, quote, the stacking and layering of small moments and reciprocal vulnerability over time.
The marble jar metaphor.
Exactly. You earn trust marbles in really small, almost unnoticeable ways.
Not saving someone from a fire.
No! It's like your colleague always making space for you at the table, that half-butt sit thing.
Yeah.
A small act of inclusion.
Or remembering the names of your obscure relatives. Things that show someone's paying attention, they care, they're reliable in small ways.
Those tiny moments fill the jar, slowly, consistently.
Okay, so to make trust something we can actually, like, teach and practice, we get the BRAVING acronym.
Mm-hmm. It breaks trust down into 7 specific behaviors. Let's run through them.
Okay, starts with B-R-A.
Boundaries. Being clear about what's okay and what's not okay and why. Reliability. Doing what you say you'll do, simple but huge. And also knowing your limits, staying in your competence zone.
And accountability.
Owning your mistakes, apologizing genuinely, making amends, not blaming or hiding.
Okay, then V-I-N.
V is for vault, keeping confidences, not sharing stuff that isn't yours to share. It's about respect.
Huge for trust.
Absolutely. A TED is an integrity, choosing courage over comfort, practicing your values consistently, everywhere, not having separate work values and life values.
Right, non-judgment.
Creating a space where people feel safe asking for help, admitting they messed up, without fear of being shamed or judged for it.
Okay, and finally, G.
Generosity. This means assuming the most generous interpretation possible about other people's intentions or words or actions.
So if someone misses a deadline, you don't immediately assume they're lazy or incompetent.
Right. Your first thought is, maybe they're overwhelmed. What could be going on? It stops those negative SFDs from taking over.
That boundary piece, the B in braving, seems really critical because we often confuse real vulnerability with just blurting everything out.
Yes. Oversharing isn't vulnerability. The research is clear. Vulnerability without boundaries isn't vulnerability. It's something else. Maybe confession, maybe manipulation, maybe just desperation.
It needs structure.
It needs intention and a clear container. Like that example of the CEO who wanted to tell investors, I'm terrified. We're losing money. I have no idea what to do.
That wouldn't build trust.
No. That creates panic. True vulnerability would be sharing the risk and the plan. Here's the challenge, it's significant, and here's our 3-point strategy to address it. That's sharing vulnerability within boundaries.
Okay, last piece here. Empathy. The antidote to shame.
The ultimate shame buster. But we have to get clear on empathy versus sympathy.
Sympathy is feeling for someone. Empathy is feeling with them.
Exactly. Sympathy often comes from a place of looking down, creating distance. Empathy builds connection. And remember, it's about connecting with the emotion someone is feeling, not necessarily having had the exact same experience.
Like the friend Suzanne in the airport story. Her friend's flight gets canceled. Total meltdown.
And Suzanne doesn't try to fix it or minimize it. She just says, this sucks. My heart is breaking too.
She connects with the feeling, the frustration, the disappointment.
Yes. She makes the brave choice, as the source puts it, to be with someone in their darkness, not to race to turn on the light so we feel better. That's empathy. Hashtag tag outro.
Wow. Okay, so this deep dive really gives us the language, the tools to stop avoiding the hard stuff in leadership. So what's the big takeaway for you listening?
I think it boils down to recalculating the cost. Leaders can either choose to invest a reasonable amount of time dealing with fears and feelings up front, doing the rumble work, or they'll end up wasting an unreasonable amount of time trying to manage all the unproductive fallout behavior that comes from not dealing with it.
It's a clear choice when you put it like that.
Yeah.
So the challenge for you today, think about your own relationship with courage and vulnerability.
Yeah. And think about agency. Do you see your emotions mostly as a problem, something to be suppressed? Or are they actually data, an asset that can inform how you lead?
Hmm. Good question.
And maybe leave you with this thought from Joseph Campbell. The cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek.
Choosing courage over comfort. That really is the revolution, isn't it?
It starts right there, dropping the armor.